The third case set for argument this morning is State of South Dakota versus Donnie Edwards, appeal number 30905. Timothy Whalen is present, will be arguing on behalf of the defendant appellant, and Paul Swedlund, Solicitor General, will be arguing on behalf of the State of South Dakota. Mr. Whalen, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel, I'm going to do a quick review of the facts given our venue and our circumstances. Donnie Edwards was charged with a number of different sex offenses. One count criminal pedophilia, four counts of rape in first degree, one count of sexual contact with a child under 16, two counts of aggravated incest, one count of fourth degree rape, and two counts of incest. Donnie was not married. Donnie was in a relationship, and as a result of that relationship, child MS was born. Later, Donnie married Phil, and Phil had two children, KR and a boy named Weston. The case involves MS and KR. After Donnie was married to Phil, the relationship with MS's mother deteriorated substantially, and she ended up coming to live with Donnie. There was a period of time where KR and MS both lived with Donnie and Phil. That relationship ended. Donnie married Nicole. During this period of time, MS lived with Donnie and Nicole. Subsequent to the relationships in August of 2022, a complaint was made by MS that Donnie had molested her, raped her ever since she was age 11 or 12. Once that information came to light, KR also stepped forward and made accusations against Donnie. Donnie was charged, he was tried, he was convicted. Prior to the trial, Donnie made a motion to sever the charges. The charges were included with KH, a young lady who was not part of the trial, KR, and MS. They were all included in an indictment. Prior to trial, KH's pedophilia charge was dismissed without motion or anything. It was dismissed voluntarily by the state. So the only trial that occurred was with KR and MS. Donnie made the motion to sever on the basis that the charges should be subject to separate trials. That's the first issue. Trial court denied that motion. That's the first issue on appeal, is whether or not that was error. During the trial, after voir dire had completed, a second issue arose, and that was juror number 77 came forward the morning that the trial was ready to begin and indicated that she had not answered fully at voir dire. She had a granddaughter who had been raped, and that she had strong feelings and had a preconceived notion that Donnie was guilty. The court determined that since the voir dire period was over and there was no, and neither party was able to challenge for cause nor exercise peremptory challenges, the court decided that it would excuse that juror for cause. Donnie ascribes error in that regard as well. The third issue is during the trial, a witness was testifying and the state solicited information about Donnie's past, whether or not Donnie had a past. That's the third issue on appeal. In the motion to sever, under the Loeschke case, the court is required to look at three tests to determine whether or not severance should occur. In this case, the court looked at the first two tests and determined they were not applicable and relied solely and completely on the third test. The third test under Loeschke is that the cases, the charges, are the product of a common scheme or plan. In order to properly analyze that issue, the court needs to apply the same test that would be applied for other acts under 404B. That is, first, is the evidence that's sought to be admitted or to be used to substantiate the joinder, is it relevant? If that answer is in the affirmative, then the second portion of the 404B inquiry is to apply the balancing test. Does the evidence that's coming in, is its probative value substantially outweighed by any unfair prejudice? Donnie,
I'm just going to stop you there for a minute, Mr. Whalen. So, that's correctly the test when we have an issue of what can be admitted for other acts evidence. But with regard to the severance question, you know, we're looking at whether or not these particular charged offenses, it's more the first part of the test, whether or not they are part of a common plan or scheme. The Rule 404B analysis does have a part in a severance issue because your argument was, well, you would be prejudiced if they were joined together. And then one of the things we consider is whether or not if the evidence would have been admitted under Rule 404B, even if they were severed in one case or the other, you could put in the acts relating to the other case, then there's really no prejudice.
Correct. Yes, that's exactly the 404B analysis. My argument is that there was prejudice and that if the cases were severed, then the evidence in MS's case would not have been admitted in KR's case and KR's evidence would not have been admitted in MS. Chief to that, the primary focus of that is MS's evidence. Because if you look at this case, there was virtually no evidence against KR except for KR's statement. There was no physical evidence. There was no forensic evidence. The state never called any other witnesses other than KR and a doctor that she had seen. And in KR's case, and we have to analyze the KR's facts before we can get to MS's very briefly, in KR's, the doctor that was called to testify indicated that KR had made a comment in her, when she was visiting with the doctor, that she had been abused sexually as a child. She didn't say who abused her. She said it was a family member, but she did not say who had abused her. And she said that that family member was no longer living in the home. She had also made a complaint that her biological father, had abused her sexually and raped her. But that case was never pursued. So we don't know from that evidence whether she was referencing Donnie or whether she was referencing her father. And it was never resolved. That's the evidence on KR. The hinge pin here and a huge point of this whole appeal, in my opinion, on the severance issue, is the evidence they had on MS. MS made same complaints that Donnie did relative to the assault and the sexual rape when she was a young child. But the only evidence, and in MS, there was no forensic evidence when she was younger. There was no DNA. There was nothing. There were no other witnesses. There's nobody. Many times that's the case in rape cases with children. But the only evidence the state had was photographs, videos, and text messages of voluminous information of what had occurred between Donnie and MS after she turned age 18. And that evidence showed incest at best. It was not rape. There was no allegation of rape, nor could there be any allegation of rape proved between Donnie and MS after MS turned age 18. They're graphic, extremely graphic. She's naked. There's photographs of masturbation. There's photographs of her pillow talk, if you will. The relationship between Donnie and MS was a very appalling relationship. It was bad because those text messages and that information showed that MS looked at Donnie as almost a boyfriend. There was a videotape.
I'm having trouble connecting how all that relates to the court step.
That's where I'm getting. All that evidence was relative to the incest charge. Didn't have anything to do with KR's rape or the alleged rape. It was decades later. It came to light after the August of 2022 complaints were made by the girls. There were different time frames. They were unrelated in all events. They're independent completely and totally. It never showed a modus operandi because she was 18.
But if I could, and I understand your argument. I understand the quantum of evidence argument, right? Because what you're really driving at is that it was so lopsided that it tilted the jury on the KR charges, which relatively speaking didn't have that kind of quantum of evidence, or was even your argument that character of evidence. But isn't it also true, though, that both victims expressed, at least in general terms, similar stories in terms of when the abuse started, similar stories that could be viewed as grooming behavior by your client. And those similarities existed, and the court was aware of those and relied upon those, could it not? Or were they was improper to consider in terms of the 404B or the other acts type analysis?
No. Very simply, they were not similar. They were different. The only similarity is that they were young children. That's the only similarity.
I'm sorry, the only similarity is what?
that they were young children. They were young.
You don't think there was grooming type activity?
I don't think it was substantially shown by the evidence at trial. I think there was an effort to show that, but I don't think it was shown. What was shown was that if we analyze the evidence, what did we see with KR? He was threatening. He was violent. He was overwhelming physically. He was coercive, intimidating. What did we see with MS? It was a consensual relationship at age 18. It was nice. She looked at him as, quote unquote, a boyfriend. She looked at him as almost a lover. And she explained in a videotape that was shown to the jury that she had two types of love for Donnie, that as a father and that as a boyfriend.
So there were, her charges weren't isolated to what happened after she was 18, though. There were other charges relating to MS that dealt when she, prior to her being 18.
Correct. And at that, MS never complained that there was threats. She never complained that he was coercive, intimidating, that he was violent. That's the differentiation between KR and MS. The chief evidence, as you said, Justice Salter, the chief evidence is the overwhelming text messages, the video, and the other documents that were produced by the state. Those were decades after the allegations of the rapes. MS.
So you're not challenging, and you haven't on appeal, that the court erred in allowing that evidence to come in to trial with respect to MS
basis or something like that.
I am, because of the severance. I'm
right, but you've not appealed the court's or the allowance of that particular evidence relating to MS.
As it relates to MS, I think there was substantial foundation as to MS. I think as to MS, that evidence would come in at a trial in her case.
So with regard to severance, the severance issue and prejudice, we have case law that says that an argument that you would be more likely to be acquitted on one of the offenses as opposed to the other as a result of the severance is not sufficient to establish prejudice that would warrant not keeping the cases together.
Correct.
So it seems that that's essentially what you're arguing here.
No, not at all. And you're correct. That's the correct statement of the law, Justice Devaney. But what I'm looking at is the I believe it's Loeschke and also the Solis case, the underlying goal is that Donnie get a fair trial. And you can't have a fair trial when there's a mountain of evidence against one defendant that is produced, and it's unrelated in all respects to another defendant, a victim, and it's unrelated in all respects to another separate victim.
So we'd have to presume the jury didn't follow the instruction that they were to separately consider each count and the evidence which applies to it?
Yes, Justice Kern, because they couldn't. When you were, I don't know if I can adequately put into words what the evidence was. A young lady naked, engaging in sexual acts, explicit sexual acts, saying, "I love you, Donnie. I wish you were here." I mean, it is graphic. It is something that is tremendously incriminating and offensive, and I don't believe the jury could look at that evidence and then step away and say, well, is he guilty of the rape of KR? It's overwhelming. And for that reason, I don't believe that they could set that aside. I have a short period of time. I'd like to address the last two issues. On the juror matter, I believe that structural error. I think that shows that we have an issue associated with the juror. And the juror came forth after the trial had was ready to start.
So what's the structural error? There's a list of six: deprivation of counsel, biased judge, unlawful exclusion, on the basis of race, the grand juror, deprivation of right to counsel, or excuse me, self-representation, deprivation of a public trial, and an erroneous reasonable doubt standard. And the court's kind of held point on that since the Nader decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. So where does structural error fit into that list?
My argument is structural error is the trial is just defective on its entirety. Because constitutionally,
there's a list. You got to get in the list. Otherwise, it's subject to harmlessness.
Yes, but under my analysis of the structural error issue is that's a constitutional right. The whole point of a jury trial is the jurors, and we need to make sure that they're selected appropriately.
We have due process problems in cases from time to time. Those are still subjected to harmless error. Prosecutorial misconduct is a due process problem. It's still subject to harmless error. It's not a structural error.
But structural error is not subject to the harmless error inquiry.
And that's why there's a discrete list. And if you're going to argue that there's a, that you have a structural error, you got to fit on that list.
I understand that. My basis is that I believe that it is the trial itself, the constitutional
right. So you're effectively asking for add to the list.
Yes. I'm sorry. I should have made that clear.
I'm still trying to figure out what your theory is on the error. So the juror... came forward and should have disclosed this during voir dire, clearly. But the circuit court brought the juror in, questioned, made sure the juror had not spoken to any of the other jurors with regard to this issue, and dismissed her. And had there were two alternates, so which is why you have alternates. Sometimes, for various reasons, a juror, after they've been selected and a trial starts, even can't finish, and you need to put in an alternate, and that's what happened here. And the court has the authority under the statute to do that. So what is the error?
I believe
your red light's on, but go ahead and answer the question.
Thank you. I believe that the error is the fact that when I'm questioning jurors in voir dire, how one juror answers may prompt others to say, that's right, I do recall that. This does make me answer. And so I think the whole voir dire process was tainted because she didn't answer truthfully or at all. And so that put me in a position where I couldn't exercise a challenge for cause. I could not exercise a peremptory challenge. And it tainted the entire process from the standpoint of it didn't occur the way it was supposed to.
But she didn't serve as a juror, and you didn't lose any peremptories.
Correct. That's correct.
Thank you. Mr. Sweetland, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court and counsel. Donnie Edwards raped his stepdaughter, K.R., from 2007 until 2013, when she was between 12 and 18 years old. K.R. moved out of the house when she turned 18, just as Edwards's 12-year-old biological daughter, M.S., who up to that point had been living with her maternal grandparents, moved into the Edwards household. AR thought that Edwards surely was not pathological enough to perpetrate on his own daughter. KR gave Edwards too much credit. Between 2013 and 2022, Edwards perpetrated on MS when she was between 12 and 19 years old. Altogether, Edwards perpetrated on one or the other of his daughters continually between 2007 and 2022. The abuse ended only after MS reported it to a friend and to a family member. Edwards was charged with multiple counts of sexual offenses in relation to his abuse of his daughters. The details of that are best left undiscussed here, but Edwards' principal claim is that the trial court erred in denying his motion to sever his trial on the KR charges from his trial on the MS charges. According to Edwards, the better documented evidence of his abuse of MS was prejudicial to his chance of acquittal on the KR charges. But a better opportunity for acquittal is not the test for severance. Severance or separate crimes which have sufficient points in common can form a common scheme or plan which can be then tried jointly. And as Justice Devaney pointed out, separate crimes may be tried jointly when the evidence of one crime...
But as I understand Mr. Whalen's argument, it's not so much that it's more likely my client was going to be convicted or KR would have been convicted. The argument more is, hey, all this prejudicial evidence came in, and it shouldn't have, particularly as to KR.
Well, so long as they have sufficient points in common, the MS and KR charges can't be tried together, both as a common scheme of plan or under 404.
Right. You still got to assess prejudice, though.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
So, assume the trials are severed and there's a 404B motion brought in both trials to let in the other alleged victims, the other acts involving the other alleged victims, say under common scheme or plan. If there had been a separate trial involving KR, would all of the evidence that Mr. Whalen has referenced that came in regarding MS have come in as an other act?
Absolutely.
Ella KR? All the videos, the post-18 sexual conduct? Would that come in under an incest theory? How would that have come in as an other act if these have been separate trials?
Well, so if I can go through the sufficient points of comment, then I can get to the answer to your question, Justice Kern.
That ultimately drives to whether or not there's prejudice here.
Sure. And there isn't, because they have sufficient points in common where that evidence from one would have come into the other under 404B anyway. So first of all, you've got Edwards is a father figure to both victims. Edwards groomed both victims with ostensibly innocent physical contact, massages, tickling, that then progressed into sexual contact. Edwards initiated his abuse with both victims as preteens, which then he perpetrated on through their teenage years. Edwards physically isolated both of his victims for his massaging and tickling when his wife was at work. Edwards socially isolated both victims to prevent them from forming attachments to males their age or friends that might disrupt his pattern of abuse. Edwards used his and his victims' phones as instruments for perpetrating on both of them. And Edwards threatened both family members. It's not correct to say it was just one. He threatened MS and KR both with physical harm, separation from family, and loss of privileges as a means of keeping the abuse secret. So to answer your question, Judge, when we're looking at prejudice here, would one have come in the other? So first of all, for example, Edwards says, well, if there was any sexual contact during my massages of KR, that was accidental. Well, that opens the door to show that it wasn't accidental. He also perpetrated on MS as a minor. And he initiated that with tickling, which then progressed to sexual contact. So what he did with MS was definitely probative of proving that his sexual contact with KR during these massages was not an accident.
But for Mr. Whalen's argument, the way I understand it is the incest charge looms large. Because even if there were, and I don't think he's conceding it, but even if there were sufficient points in contact for the conduct prior to age 18, as I understand his argument, it changes at age 18 and the points of contact don't exist anymore. Now it's this disordered consensual relationship that he's described. And yet there's a mountain of evidence from that post 18 conduct, which doesn't look like the points of conduct for the pre 18 404B other acts type evidence. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a 403 argument, but what that is. But I mean, I understand his argument. So let's say you have. I'm sorry. I'll land the plane here. But let's say that there's separate trials, and it's Justice Kern suggests, you know, is all this coming in? Is it possible that at separate trials some of it comes in, but the post 18 stuff doesn't come in? And if the answer to that's yeah, then I think that's what Mr. Whalen's arguing.
Well, two things. First of all, for Edwards to come up here and say there's just no evidence that this abuse happened while MS was a minor. Well, MS got on the stand and testified to this. That's evidence, and that's powerful evidence. So there is certainly evidence that there was abuse of MS as a minor. And then second of all, you know, this doesn't just happen overnight that an 18-year-old daughter decides.
It's a fine point.
she's going to, you know, make her father her boyfriend. This goes to the grooming that happened many, many years before, the isolation, the exploitation, the threats. So, yeah, it continued afterwards, but that is evidence of the grooming and the abuse that happened over a much longer period of time.
Yeah, and that's certainly relevant, and I get that argument, but you got this mountain of evidence in MS's case post-18, and does that all come in KR's trial, if there is a separate trial?
Yes.
All of it.
All of it. He entered a categorical denial that he sexually abused KR. So the pattern of behavior that he used with MS is used to show his motive and intent during the period of time that he was perpetrating on KR. So, for example, you know, all the stuff on the phone. KR testified that Donnie used his phone when he perpetrated on her. So that evidence from MS, even though it's post 18 years of age, is very probative of the testimony about what he did with his phone.
The controlling theory, that control with the phone theory, that request.
Not the control, but the grooming. So he's sending KR pornography to her phone. He's using his phone to take pictures of her while she's in the shower, just like he was doing with MS when MS was at college. He's having her take pictures of herself in the shower, and Donnie's taking pictures of KR when she's in the shower. So that goes directly to motive and intent, and it goes directly to a common scheme or plan.
And it appears in this case, and then it happened, that the evidence, the retention of the photos and that type of conduct happened to be after she went to college. So that's why the evidence that was related to that common theme that started before 18, but the evidence of it, because she had the phone and could turn over those images to law enforcement when she finally reported.
Exactly. She moves out of the house. Now it's long distance perpetration. And but the pattern continues. He wants pictures of them in the shower. He wants pictures of them on his phone. So even though it happened when she was 18, it didn't happen overnight. This is just a continuation of a pattern of abuse that started in 2007, and it has all these sufficient points in common that it was certainly a common scheme or plan that he exercised and used from 2007 up through 2022.
Yeah, I suppose it's also the absence of mistake under 404B, right?
Because well, that accident got, mainly.
Because that got into the evidence as well.
Yeah.
It was accidental, it was this.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Edwards kicked down the door to all this evidence when he claimed that his sexual contact that he was having with KR during these massages was accidental.
Will you address this issue three as well regarding the mistrial? Regarding the state's question that brought out the reference to Donnie's past.
Sure. Again, that's an area where Edwards opened the door to this line of questioning. Edwards called a cousin of KR and MS to testify to a text exchange that she had with KR about the MS allegations. At the time, this is important, at the time when the MS allegations first came out, KR had not told the family that she too had been abused by Edwards. So, you know, the cousin then testifies that, and this is just rank opinion. I mean, it's foundationless opinion. The cousin testifies, her demeanor and her language, it wasn't consistent with somebody who had been abused herself. Well, you know, as the court found, that opened the door. And the prosecution then cross-examined this witness about a portion of the text, the same text string, in which K.R. asked what the cousin meant about Donnie having a past. Well, that question was consistent with the victim, wanting to know if her abuse, which predated MS's abuse, was the past that MS was referring to. She wants to know if the secret of her abuse is now a matter of common knowledge within the family. So that question was, in fact, consistent with acting like a victim. So that was valid impeachment. But it's important to note that the court really put a tight lid on this. The court instructed the jury to disregard the question, and then the subsequent efforts to further question the witness about it, the cousin just sort of maintained the Edwards line and maintained that, that wasn't what she was asking about. So it was a legitimate question. Edwards opened the door to it, and the trial court properly denied the mistrial. And part of the mistrial analysis requires the court to balance that question against all of the evidence at trial. So you've got the testimony of both victims describing an identical pattern of abuse and control over a 15-year period. You have residual physical injuries to KR consistent with childhood sexual abuse. So there is a forensic and physical evidence. You have, of course, the evidence of abuse of MS that's on Edwards' own phone. I mean, this isn't on MS's phone. This is Edwards' own phone where this stuff is at, including a picture of his fingerprints engaging in sexual contact. And then, of course, you have Edwards' own admissions that he enjoyed the sexual attentions of his daughter. So considering that evidence as a whole, it's really hard to imagine that a jury was ready to acquit Edwards, but for this brief reference to the past, particularly when KS's abuse predated, KR's abuse predated MS's. So the jury did not convict Edwards because of a joint trial, did not convict him because of veneer bias, did not convict him because of some vague reference to his past. They convicted him because of the damning evidence of his guilt, not because of any error at trial. So the state would ask that this court affirm the convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Whalen, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, police court and counsel. We don't know if Donnie would have been acquitted. None of us in this whole room here today know. The only ones who know is a jury that was selected who didn't hear all of the evidence against MS in a trial with KR. We don't know. MS and KR had credibility issues at trial. That was clear from the record. Grooming. The expert testified grooming actions can be consistent with genuine affection towards another family member. The other thing that is important here as far as the severance issue and the consideration of the common scheme and plan. The judge rejected the state's argument on the first two tests under Loeschke. The judge also ruled that other acts with the Highmore rape, alleged Highmore rape, were excluded from evidence. The judge also ruled that all the evidence of the dismissed counts against KH, the pedophile count, could not be brought in at trial. So the evidence that we're looking at here is it has to be something that's consistent with a common scheme or plan, identity, absent mistake, those things. Here, that evidence that was brought in with MS, that was to show Donnie's character and that he allegedly acted in conformity therewith, and that's a prohibited circumstance under 404B analysis.
Why wouldn't it go to, what his intentions were, that these weren't accidental touchings, as he was claiming? Why wouldn't it go to refute that?
Because of the Solis case. In Solis, it addressed this issue with domestic abuse, and it indicated in a quote portion at paragraph 23 that domestic abuse often has a history that's highly relevant to the truth-finding process. when accused has a close relationship with the victim, prior aggressions, etc., with the same victim by the same perpetrator. We're talking two different independent cases, KRMS. SOLA says you have to look, if you want to use that evidence, you have to look at the activity between the same people. What did they continually do throughout that history? And so the key on analyzing what evidence may be used against KR in KR's case is what did he do with her, not what did he do with MS. And that's what SOLAS tells us. The other thing is that...
So we have cases, I believe, and I can't say the name at the moment, but where we've had child sex abuse charges where the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, had been viewing pornography relating to children. And we have found and not reversed where courts have admitted that type of evidence to show... what was intended in those types of cases. You know, here we have evidence, photographic evidence, video evidence of a very similar alleged victim. So why would that not be admitted in a case as other act evidence?
They're distinguishable. He didn't have child pornography. The DCI took all of his phones, all of his computers.
Well, I'm not suggesting he was. I get more in a broader sense. So we were looking at, well, here we have this photographic evidence involving not even a related victim that we have found maybe have relevance to the tendency or the desire to engage in sexual acts with a child.
Right, but you didn't have that. We do not have that here. That's the key. Everything with MS was when she was 18 and over. There's nothing about sex with young children, 11, 12 years old. DCI took all the phones. They took everything. There's no photos. There's no videos. There's no text messages. There's nothing until MS and Donnie have a relationship at age 18 and beyond. That's the distinguishing characteristic about that.
But wouldn't that evidence make it more likely that or help corroborate her claim that it was going on, it started earlier?
No, because the basis for the state's claim in that regard is that he likes having sex with kids. But that's not what the MS evidence shows. It shows adult relationships. So it's different. Evidence of other acts, even other rapes, aren't always admitted in a rape trial. They have to be some correlating connection, and there isn't any here. That's the huge issue. There's nothing. Even if it were, it's illegal. Okay, it's incest. That's not rape with and sexual acts with children 11, 12, 13 years old. They're different, and that's the problem. And a jury couldn't get past that, in my opinion. You have to look at the type of evidence that was at issue here. In addition, on issue three, I never asked anything about Donnie's past. I never opened the door. The judge said it was a close call, but she considered that I opened the door when I asked about certain things. I didn't. The judge indicated that it was a partial open at best, but opening up the past, that's a huge detrimental prejudicial issue. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning.